Welcome to Tales from South Florida. I'm your host, Bill Monte. You know, the universe works in mysterious ways, doesn't it? I'm reminded of that because of something that recently happened. So I was planning out future episodes for Tales from South Florida for the podcast back in the summer. And I make little notes to myself all over the place. And I made a note that said, Hollywood, Hialeah, and the Freedom Tower all turn 100 this year. Be sure to do an episode on that. Well, I rearranged my office where I record and lost the paper and totally forgot about it. So 2 weeks ago, and I'm recording this mid-October, 2 weeks ago, I get contacted by someone named Hillary Reynolds, and she is contacting me from Poland Public Relations. Wants to know if I'd be interested in interviewing a filmmaker who grew up in Hollywood and in 2005 made a movie based on his experience as a childhood growing up in the South Florida area, based on him, his family. And of course, I jumped at the chance. Now, the reason they were reaching out is as part of the celebration of Hollywood Centennial, they're going to be showing his film at a theater in downtown. So I was happy to be connected with Joseph Greco, who is the writer and one of the producers and the director of the film Canvas, which stars Marcia Gay Harden, Oscar winner and Tony Award winner, and Joe Pantoliano, who many of you might know either from, he played Cypher in The Matrix. He played Ralphie in The Sopranos, for which he won an Emmy Award. The film is fantastic. They're going to be showing it, as I said, coming up November 1st. And I was excited to have the opportunity to meet Joseph and to talk with him about growing up in South Florida, which fits right in with this podcast, and about his experiences as a filmmaker. So the interview is coming right up here just as soon as I stop talking. But stay tuned after the interview because I'm going to give you information on how to get tickets. The tickets are free. And also to tell you another amazing story that we found out as we were talking that didn't make it into the final cut of the episode. So I'll tell you about it. Amazing how the universe works. But my friends, for right now, I'm happy to introduce to you from Hollywood, Florida, Joseph Greco.
Hi, Bill. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure and look forward to talking with you.
We're going to concentrate a little bit first on you grew up in Hollywood, correct? You were born in Hollywood.
I was born in Memorial Hospital and I grew up, I guess it would be East Hollywood. I grew up 26th and Johnson, right around there, right near the Sunset Golf Course, and went to Oak Ridge Elementary. Some of my fondest memories were hanging out at the Hollywood Mall and fishing in the canals. Went to Olson Middle for 1 year and then transferred to Driftwood because then we moved to, I guess, West Hollywood, Davie area. And so I went to Driftwood for 7th and 8th grade and then went to Hollywood Hills High School.
Wow. So that's good. So for everyone, if you don't mind, like what year were you in Driftwood? And so people listening can relate to, oh my God, I might have known him. I was going to that same
time. Well, you might. Yeah. Well, it's easier for me to think about when I graduated high school. I graduated in 1990 from Hollywood Hills High. Okay. Then I went to Florida State Film School. So I graduated FSU in 94. And, you know, I still have my family in South Florida. I live in Los Angeles, but all of my movies actually have been made, with the exception of a film I did in London, a short documentary. Most of my work, narrative features, and narrative work in general have been filmed in Florida. So I love, you know, I consider myself bi-coastal in many ways because I go back often. I still have my mother who lives in South Florida. My father passed away in 2014, but I still have roots in Florida. I still consider myself a Floridian and have plans to make another movie in Florida hopefully soon. So yeah, I'm consider myself lucky and blessed that I was able to grow up in South Florida, because it was a really great childhood, you know. Being able to go to the beach, you know, very easily. Fishing was a way of life, and then we used to go to the Florida Keys all the time. You know, Key Largo was only an hour and a half away. So, but yeah, I love South Florida.
Yeah, and it's so easy to keep coming back here. I know, you know, I moved away several times. I lived in L.A. in 1976 for a little while and came back here. I got first marriage was I had moved up to North Carolina, came back here, lived in Tallahassee for a little while with some friends, lived out there. I always came back here. This is like there is something special about the South Florida area. There is something special about the whole, the culture and just the way of life. And I think, you know, I've thought about this often. I know for me, I came of age, I think, a very special time in this, in the mid 70s, late 70s and early 80s. And I think your age probably was the last to know South Florida as it was pre-Andrew, because everything changed after Andrew.
Yeah. Andrew hit while I was in college. I mean, yeah, I think certainly the coastal communities have really grown up a lot since we were kids, since we were young. I mean, you know, when you go down to Fort Lauderdale Beach or even Hollywood Beach, it's grown up a lot. Although I think Hollywood still, you know, thankfully has retained that sort of beach town vibe. I still feel like it's there. I don't feel like it's as much of a condo mecca as like South Beach or some of these other places. It still has that vibe that I grew up with, but it's still, you know, it's growing. You know, I think people have heard of how great it is to be down there, and a lot of people have moved to South Florida.
Yeah, they're flocking down here at record rates.
I don't blame them, but yeah, it was a great way of life, and I think I think one of the reasons why I enjoy making movies there and why I'm so passionate about that is I think it's important in film, in all visual media, that like authenticity of place is very important to me. And the lighting, the light, the people, the culture, the landscape, all of that is so unique. You just can't fake it. It informs all of my stories. You know, I grew up fishing. I grew up sailing. It just gets in you. It gets in your bones. You know, it gets in your aesthetic when you're a visual artist. That's how you frame things. That's how I frame things. Being able to go to the beach and sit and stare at the horizon, being able to canoe down the canals, and it's sort of, I don't know, it's I guess I'm romanticizing it as I look back, but there was a little bit of a Huck Finn magic to growing up in South Florida for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. This whole podcast is about romanticizing the past. So,
okay, yeah.
and probably making it sound better than it actually was at the time, because, you know, in memory, of course, everything was grander and better. Because we're always comparing to now as opposed to back then. But, you know, that's exactly what the podcast is about. So please keep making your movies and films and documentaries, whatever, about keeping that dream alive and that memory alive. Because so many of us, I know, just from, you know, the Facebook groups, which are so prevalent. I grew up in Hollywood. I grew up in South Florida. I grew up in wherever it might be. That's what they're always talking about is 30, 40 years ago on there. Very rarely do you hear people talking about the latest thing happening 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. And also I think because we grew up, and I'm so grateful I grew up without social media. You know, we didn't have phones glued to our hands when we were kids. And it was all about playing outside until the last vestige of light was in the sky, and then being, you know, hearing your name be yelled across the neighborhood, time to come in, you know, that there was something really beautiful about that. And I think, you know, that's something that I think all kids should try and do, is just enjoy that period where you're present in the moment, and you're enjoying the moment, because it goes by in a flash.
Yeah, we hear people say it all the time. It sounds like kind of like the old guy, get off my lawn kind of thing. But yeah, I do think social media is taking kids away. Just watch, and I'm not going to say kids, even adults, they're just walking down the sidewalk staring at their phones. They're walking with their kids. They're pushing their baby in a carriage. They're walking their dogs, but their face is planted in their palm like that. And I'm thinking, you're missing the sky. You're missing
Yeah.
that beautiful blue sky we have down here. You're missing that sunset.
We're all connected by these devices these days, but yeah, it was a great life, and I do look back fondly at the places I saw movies too, which are sadly not there anymore. You know, the theater across the street from the Hollywood Mall, I think it was the Twin,
The Florida Twin.
Florida Twin, was where I saw all the big movies from my childhood. You know, E.T., Superman, the Star Wars films, and it was an event. You know, you just I remember smelling the popcorn walking in there. I remember the feel of the marble floors, and that unfortunately is gone. And then Sheridan 7, which then became Sheridan 12 or 14 at some point, that was on Sheridan Street. That's no longer there.
No.
But those were the places, those were the hangouts too, you know. And I my dad loved movies, and we would go to the film, go to see a movie. It would seem like every Friday or Saturday, that was our thing to do together. And you know, when you're in South Florida, you know this, it's hot, and I grew up without air conditioning, so being able to go to the movies and have air conditioning just made it all the sweeter, you know. So it was fantastic.
So did your house have the jalousie windows and the terrazzo floor?
Yes, we had the jalousie. We had the high, we had a house that had sort of a high vaulted ceiling, so that was, you know, good because it wasn't too hot. I mean, I'm one of these strange people out here in California that likes the humidity because I grew up with it. But you know, you always had that breeze. So we had a lot of ceiling fans, a lot of fans in the house. Lots of fond memories for sure.
So one of the reasons that we're talking, we're getting together here, we mentioned you are a filmmaker, a writer, producer, director, and we are now, in case anyone listening to this isn't aware of it, Hollywood is 100 years old. As part of a celebration of that, they are going to be showing your film Canvas in downtown Hollywood on November 1st. And I'm going to talk to you a lot more at the end of all this, so I'll tell you how to get all the tickets, all that kind of stuff, folks. So don't worry about writing it down here. This movie was it was shot, was it all in South Florida? Was it primarily in South Florida?
Entire, I would say 99% in South Florida, 95% in Hollywood. We shot a little bit in Key Biscayne at the Bill Bagg State Park because for the lighthouse. For
Right.
those who saw it, there's a lighthouse. We had to shoot a few pickups inserts in Los Angeles while we were editing. You know, just close-ups of certain things. Just you always have to grab pieces. Like I said, 95% of it was in Hollywood, and yeah, all the places that I grew up feature prominently in the movie. The place where my father took me sailing, and we would anchor together overnight was North Lake, and that's where he would sail, and where he one of the places he would sail with my mom years ago. And that's in the movie. And you know, when I set out to make the film, and we could talk about this if you'd like,
Yeah,
is
tell us about the movie, the plot, and the
sure.
wonderful stars, which are
Thank
amazing.
you. Yeah, I had a great cast. So the film is inspired by my childhood. It's deeply personal. I grew up with a mentally ill parent, and the movie is really about a family torn apart by mental illness and how they are able to come back together, how the father is able to hold the family together in a sort of a unorthodox way. And my father was, you know, did that in real life. You know, my mother lived with mental illness, with severe mental illness, my whole life, and still has it. She still is, you know, struggling with severe schizophrenia, but she's, you know, fantastic mother. I count myself blessed because, in spite of all that, she was very loving, and for the most part, for most of the time, not always. But my father loved sailing. You know, he was an old Navy veteran. He loved boats, and he built three sailboats when I was a kid. So when my mother was in the mental hospital, and I, you know, for folks who will see the film, that's part of the plot of the movie, is Marcia Gay Harden, fantastic actress, plays my mother, a character inspired by my mom, I should say. Joe Pantoliano, also a great actor, plays John Marino, a character inspired by my father, and he decides that he's going to build a sailboat. That's what he's going to do because he used to sail with his wife, and they're going to go sailing when she comes home from the hospital. So building this boat together, the father and son are sort of sublimating all their grief and trauma into this, into something positive, which is really what the movie's about. It's about, sublimating your whatever it is you might be dealing with, struggling with, into something artistic. And so the father uses his love of sailing and building this boat. The mother, Marcia's character, her name's Mary. She's a painter. She loves artwork, so she's always sketching, painting. And then the son, the boy, played by another great actor, Devin Gearhart. He is a sort of a aspiring artist in his own right, and he I won't give this part away for those who see the movie, but he also has his own artistic pursuit, sort of brings those threads together literally, and that's really what the movie's about. And actually the act of making the film was a creative act of me attempting to take something that was painful to talk about at one point into a story. That's what I think we all do as artists, as storytellers, is how do you take something, and try and find meaning from it and make it meaningful, hopefully, to an audience so they can have that experience. And so that movie really was about making lemonade out of lemons, and it's also a love letter to my parents and to South Florida. When we decided to film in South Florida, originally I was because our production offices were down in Miami at Greenwich Studios, and my producers Sharon Lane and Adam Hamill and Lucy were all down in Greenwich, and so I began scouting North Miami, right around there, because when you're making a movie, you want to keep things close together. But I just couldn't find the locations that fit the story. I tried to find the house because in the movie, it's not just finding a house, it's finding an interior and an exterior, because we didn't have the budget to build things. So we had to find a practical house that's empty, or a house where the residents are willing to have a little vacation and stay in a hotel for a month. And also has to have a backyard because they build the boat in this yard, and there's a neighbor, and then so there's like five or six criteria, and it starts to become hard to find. And my producers are getting a little nervous. I said, just give me one more weekend. So then I went to my hometown in Hollywood. I drove up from North Miami, and I didn't want to force this issue on my producers. I didn't want to say, hey, we have to shoot in Hollywood, but it was. In one day, I found, I would say, most of the locations. We had a wonderful location manager, supervisor, who fleshed it out. But I found a house or a neighborhood that, one house after another was like, okay, these are going to work. Because in Florida, as you know, Bill, growing up there, and you have the jealousy windows, but also we needed a Florida room, because in this story, Marsha's character paints in the Florida room, and outside that Florida room, through the window, we need to see that boat being built. I mean, just that visually is so important. The boat is looming there in so many scenes. And I found a house. Oh, perfect Florida room, and then everything kind of came together. We found the school, because once we knew we were going to be living at the house for most of the shoot, so. Once we had our house, then all the other locations came by, and I knew where to shoot the sailing because we were originally thinking, oh, maybe we'll go out to the ocean and shoot that. But again, we didn't have the budget, and weather was a concern because we actually had to shoot that after the hurricane, which again we could talk more about. And so I said, let's just go to North Lake. It's a basically a sheltered body of water, and that's all we need. And it was fantastic. It worked out perfectly. And that's where I would go with my dad is North Lake, the yacht basin, and that's where we'd launch our boat. And when you have that experience and you grow up in a region and you know the place so well,
Right.
It becomes so easy to film because everything was storyboard. I had a shot list, but what was in my head ultimately really did inform the shots because I wasn't trying to impose anything. It was like, okay, this is where it is. This is the boat ramp. This is where the boat sits. This is the jetty we almost hit. All of that stuff becomes much more, not just feasible, but I think it's easier as when you're a filmmaker to just be in the place where it happened.
Yeah. So Wilma, for those who might hear this, not familiar with it, Hurricane Andrew came in 1992, and that's the hurricane everyone talks about. And obviously, like Katrina, years later in New Orleans, Andrew was devastating to Dade County. It did not affect Broward County as much. We were affected, but not as much as we thought we would be by that storm.
That's right.
Wilma was our Andrew. It was not as strong. It was not as big a hurricane. But I remember taking my family and going into the kitchen and sheltering because our patio doors, and we had shutters up. Our patio doors were shaking so violently, I thought the glass was going to explode into the house. It this the wind. We had those aluminum shutters that you have to, put up
Yes.
into the
Yeah,
brackets,
with the
and
screwdriver, yep.
yeah, and it took one of those shutters on the end and bent it. It literally, the wind was so strong, it literally bent that. So I'm up looking outside the bedroom watching this shutter just bend under the force of the storm. So how does that, I mean, that really hit us. How far into shooting were you when that
Well,
happened?
yeah, we were thir 3 weeks in, 2.5 to 3 weeks, and I knew again, growing up in South Florida, come. My was it hurricane season starts in June, I believe, May or June,
Yeah,
remind
so
me.
yeah, June and goes through
November.
November. Yeah.
Yeah. So starting in June, you habitually I you just become used to checking the NOAA website. It's
Right.
like it's part of life in South Florida. You just what's going on in the tropics? We had some wonderful meteorologists on TV that we would turn to. But I remember about 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks in, about 2.5, 2 to 2.5, because it was like 7 days of dread when I saw the track. I saw what, and you kind of know
Yeah.
generally where the cone starts to where it looks ominous, because if you know the Gulf Stream and you just grew when you grow up there, you just know the waters, the currents, and you just have a feeling. And I just felt this doesn't look good. And my producers, we all safety first always. So I remember we decided we were going to send our cast out of town. Marsha, Joey, and Devin, we sent them out. We booked their flights to leave so they would not be there during the hurricane because we didn't know what was going to happen. We really didn't know how long this was going to impact not just the movie, but South Florida. More importantly, is this safe? And we didn't want them to be there. They wanted to be with their families, of course. So I remember the night before they left, I think Joey and Devin left before, but the scene, there was a scene out in the yard where Marsha's character is struggling with these really debilitating delusions, and out in the rainstorm. It's actually written in the script that it's raining, pouring
Yeah.
down rain. So we had real rain towers, and when we would finish shooting, the fake rain would stop, our rain that we were manufacturing, and then the real rain would come from the outer bands that usually precede any big hurricane. And we shot all night, and she w had a six, I think a 6 a.m. flight. To her credit, Marsha was out there helping my crew bring things in. I said, "Hey, Marsha, please, this is not safe. There's lightning. It was scary." But she was out there helping us move things into the garage, out of harm's way. She made it out safely, thank goodness. And then we basically were shut down. I think after it passed, we were actually my crew and I. We were in at the Marriott. My friend Danny, out of the generosity of his heart, put those out of towners in a hotel on the beach. We're right next to the Marriott, and our cast was at the Marriott. So I remember we were in the ballroom of the Marriott, during the hurricane when it was overhead and the chandelier was shaking.
Yeah.
And as soon as it passed, we all went up to the balcony or out to the, yeah, to the balcony and watched. And you, to the right, we were looking south. To the right, as we're looking towards Miami from Hollywood on the beach, was beautiful blue sky, absolutely stunning. And on the left, if you turn your head to the left, it was just dark black. Just that's where the so we were literally we're seeing the storm pass. So no power. And after, you know, a day or two to of assessing things, it might not even have been a day or two. It might have been that same day or afternoon. We all convened at Elaine's house, Elaine Kuser, who was our set decorator, set dresser, just a very talented designer. And my AD, Brian Moon, and myself, we were at her house in Hollywood, right by Little Flower Church. And we were trying to, okay, what are we going to do? Some of the people on the crew, my producers, was like, hey, we have to shut down. One of my producers, George Hickenlooper, who was a mentor, who sadly passed away, he's known for his wonderful work that he co-directed called Hearts of Darkness, The Making of Apocalypse Now. So he knew something about tough shoots. And I remember he called me the day after it hit, and he said, Joe, do not stop shooting, just keep the crew together, because once you let a crew disperse, people fly to different all over the place, and you it's very difficult to get people back. And I took that in seriously, and I said, let's figure out a way to do this. So I was shooting inserts with stand-ins of cupboards being opened, and but with doubles, you know, just anything to
Okay.
just keep the crew together. I credit my producers; they supported us. And so what we did is we used the generator that we had already to put gas in everyone's car, and my producers made a deal with a gas station that we would help them pump their gas. If we brought a generator, can you help us get gas in our crew vehicle so we can keep shooting? And also the generators that need to be used to feed everyone. We needed power, we needed gas. It was harrowing, you know, but we, you know, the crew stuck together, and I can't say enough about the crew. You know, I really appreciated everything they did. And we just barreled through, and then after a few days, Joey and Marcia were comfortable. And again, good credit to them. They came back down and we finished the movie.
Wow. So the show must go on. And if I recall correctly, too, the day, maybe the 2 days after it hit, it got really cold here.
I think you're right. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it
So
did.
we were all like, oh, well, we don't have power, but that's okay because just open the windows because it was like
That's
in the
right. We
40s.
were spared the humid heat, I mean, of summer. You're right.
Yeah, for a couple of days.
And you know, my DP, Rob Sweeney, he lives in Los Angeles, so he was one of those crew members. I couldn't finish the movie without him. And he stayed to his credit, and to, you know, my unending gratitude for all of them. But you know what's wonderful is the extra time I had, you know, again, making lemonade out of lemons was useful because I was able to finished tinkering with some scenes that we had yet to shoot. We had some really difficult scenes yet left to do. We couldn't fin We didn't have a movie yet. We had this a whole sailing sequence. We had a big scene in a restaurant. Again, that restaurant was closed, and we had to bring our generator and power it up. And
The Thanksgiving Day scene.
yeah, that was the Thanksgiving scene. The Thanksgiving Day scene was shot during or post Wilma. We had about at least a week left of work to do, and it was, you know, it brought us all closer together. We of course you look back fondly at it. It wasn't fun at the time. It was nerve-wracking, and but you do what you have to do.
That's an amazing story. It sounds like you could almost do a Heart of Darkness documentary about the making of Canvas. So
It wasn't nearly as difficult as Apocalypse Now. That was Yeah, that was legendary.
yeah,
But
that is legendary.
so moral of the story, everyone, is if you're making a movie, do not shoot during hurricane season. So
I
I will not be filming during hurricane season when I'm down there again.
I have to a couple of comments about the film. I am not a, you know, a film critic of any kind, but let me just say kudos. Both of the stars, Marcia Gay Harden, she had a role that in someone else's hands could have been so over the top and was played so perfectly. I mean, just, and I know that's also direction, so that's to you. But I was, you know, as the film started, that very first scene where we see her actually, and when Chris, the little boy who's you, Chris comes into the room, and I thought to myself, oh, this could go off the rails real fast if we're not careful. And yes. I watched it just get handled perfectly. And I'll say the same thing for Joe's role. Now, he's an actor who is known for sometimes, you know, Ralphie in The Sopranos, you know, Cypher in The Matrix. And, you know, he plays broad characters, you know. Mm-hmm. And again, this was a role that could have gone a very different direction because it's so emotional what's happening within this family. And mm-hmm. he plays it just at the right level. It's not under so that you're missing some of those fine points that have to be hit. It's never over the top so that you're taken out of the reality of what you're watching. Mm-hmm. So those two performances and the whole cast, I mean, actually, yeah, the little boy, and I'm sorry, Devin, I think is his name.
Yeah, Devin.
They do such a great job. The scene that got me, I'll tell you, is when Mary, the mother, gets into the bed with Chris mm-hmm. to apologize.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a hard scene to watch in a good way, if you know what I mean.
Sure. Sure. Thank you. I'm so happy to hear you say that. And I had a wonderful cast and I agree with you. I think that, when you have great actors, you kind of have to get out of their way. And I feel like, I got the cast I wanted. I wanted to tell an Italian American story. You know, it was important. You know, it's shades, it's subtle, but that was my growing up. And Joey, you know, he brought that sensibility, that quiet Italian American sensibility that my father had. And Marcia, you know, she was someone I wanted from the very beginning. We didn't know if she was going to be able to do the movie until I think 2 weeks before we started filming, and everyone was very nervous. And Joey, thankfully, knew her and arranged a meeting, and I was able to meet with her, and she was willing to kind of ask me the questions. And after that meeting, she agreed to do it. So I was so happy because I agree. She, you know, there's a danger there to whenever you have a character that has any sort of mental illness. And I intentionally didn't have the actors, Joey or Marcia, meet my parents.
I was going to ask about that. Yeah.
I wanted them to have the freedom to create their characters because I wanted it to exist as a work of drama first. It has to succeed as a narrative film first. I'm not making a documentary. So they have to be given the freedom to have that. That's their character. And I didn't want them to feel like they're having to mimic anything or copy anything. And yet, when we were filming, Marcia was so generous because she was always asking me, well, what would your mom do in this instance? Or what? Tell me, she was very curious, and Joey was too. And they, before we made the film, as part of the rehearsal, I think a week or two before we started our shoot, I had them visit a mental health organization in New York, a clubhouse that basically is an organization where the people who have a mental illness or are living with a mental illness are also the people running the place. And it's about rehabilitation, but it's also about, you know, giving them the ability to get back into the workforce. And so they got to spend time and absorb the behaviors themselves. So they did their own research. I can't take credit for all of that, but I will forever be in their debt. And I learned a lot working with them. Yeah, it was great. I feel like so much of directing is casting. I think it was Marty Ritt who said, you know, 90% of actually a lot of directors subscribe to this. So you if you cast well, then that's the first big hurdle after the script. Once you have a great script, you have to have a good script. Then you, if you cast well, then you're two-thirds of the way there.
Yeah, well, you did that right because the cast is, and I want to give a shout out to some local actors. Those who have listened to the podcast for a while know that I was an actor back in the 80s through the 90s, and I was so happy to see people like Barbara Sloan, Robert Small, Harriet Osser, with roles in here. And it's always just nice to see the local talent. And you said, obviously, again, you said that a lot of the crew was local, and that's what we need more of in South Florida. In the 80s, when I was working at the talent agent's office and I was acting, we were really bringing in the movies into South Florida back then. We were giving tax breaks to the companies. The government, the Florida government was behind it. That's why you had films like True Lies. That's why you had a Miami Vice, Flight of the Navigator. You had so many movies, Porky's, that were made down here because we nurtured that relationship. And that has gone away in the last like 20 years or so, maybe even more. And I would just encourage filmmakers to, like you said, look at South Florida. It's a great place. You have great talent down here. You have wonderful, incredible talent in South Florida,
Absolutely.
both from a technical standpoint and from actors and everything else. So, absolutely, please come make your movies here, make your television shows, make your commercials here. What's on the horizon for you now as the next film? What do you have in the works, if you can tell that?
Yeah, I can share a little bit about it. I actually, about the time I was finishing up Canvas, I read a newspaper article about a gentleman who embarked on a round the world sailing journey, and he left out of Fort Lauderdale. I really loved the story, and so I plan to make a movie inspired by the true story of this man who sailed around the world. We have the script written, and we've got some wonderful producers involved. Jonathan Sanger, who's a legendary producer, he produced The Elephant Man and
Wow, okay.
some wonderful films. We're just excited to hopefully film as much of it in South Florida as we can. And I agree with you that the incentives, the state hasn't necessarily been as financially committed as they were in the past, but I think that's changing. I think there are people in Tallahassee who do understand that this is a business that needs to be, it's an investment in Florida. And I do also, there are people in on at the county level in Fort Lauderdale. The Fort Lauderdale has a wonderful, Broward County has a wonderful film commissioner, Sandy Leiterman, who's very supportive, who actually started as a producer, and she gets it. And she Fort Lauderdale has a great incentive, and I'm very committed and dedicated to supporting the local industry there. I couldn't agree with you more. There's so much talent there, in front of and behind the camera, and I would love to be able to do it again. And hope that's our plan is to do it as soon as we can. We just need to raise a little bit more money, but we're getting close.
Good, good. Well, I would look forward to the next project, but for everyone else, we'll go back here. We'll circle full way around. We're celebrating Hollywood's 100th year of being Hollywood. Part of that celebration is going to happen on November 1st at the Cinema Paradiso in downtown Hollywood. And here's another, like we were talking before, and I'll explain kind of in the outro here. Folks will stick around, but there's so many coincidences. I worked in a store in downtown Hollywood that was directly across the street from Cinema Paradiso. So
Oh, wow.
when I heard it was there, I was like, are you kidding me? This is like just another thing that just seems fortuitous in this entire interview and everything that's happening.
What was the
It was
store?
called Saks. It was a shoe store.
Okay.
And it was next to the Rainbow. I don't know if you remember the Rainbow Diner that used to be in downtown Hollywood. It was there
Oh,
forever. Yeah, right by Young Circle.
yeah.
And yeah, so it was right by there. I worked there briefly in, I don't know, 1998 or 99. I was doing radio at the time, so I was trying to supplement some money. And boy, when I heard it was going to be held here, I was like, oh my God, here we are again. So it's November 1st at 7:30 p.m. It is a showing of the film Canvas. It's not a huge theater, folks. So if you want to take part in this, you're going to need to go online and reserve your tickets. This is a free event, but you still have to reserve your spot, reserve your tickets. You can't show up that night.
That's right. It's tickets are going fast, and honored that the city and the historical Hollywood Historical Society have sponsored it. And we have another sponsor, if you don't mind, just a shout out to Nine Muses, you know, because Marcia's character is a painter, as I mentioned. And so all the artwork in the movie that she paints was painted by people from Nine Muses, people living with mental illness who all use art as their therapy. And so I'm really honored and grateful that they could be a sponsor again, and they're still helping so many people. And so you'll be able to see some of their artwork on display at the Paradiso.
Okay, so come see the film. Enjoy afterwards a Q&A with Joe here. He can ask you questions and everything, and you'll have a wonderful time. I could tell you where you could see the film, but I'm not going to tell you until after November 1st if you want to
That's
take a
fine.
chance. But so you got to come see it. You got to get your tickets there. Thank you so much. This has been so much fun, and just
You're
connecting with
welcome.
someone and
Thank you. Thank you for what you're doing, and I'll be joined by some of my crew, so it won't just be me. It'll be with some of my producers, and Elaine will be there, Brian. Some of the people I've talked about on your podcast will be there with me, so we'll be able to share more stories and answer any questions people may have.
Excellent. And if you're ever looking for ideas for a movie or anything, Tales from South Florida. I got a million ideas for you.
I'm sure you do. Yeah, we'll have to, if you continue, we'll have to keep the conversation going here.
All right. Joe, thank you
All right.
so much. You have a great
My
day. And
pleasure.
hopefully
Thank you.
I can reserve some tickets and I'll see you on Saturday,
That would be
November
great.
1st.
That would be great. And thanks to your listeners. I appreciate everyone's time.
All right. Thank you so much.
I want to thank Joseph Greco one more time for taking his time out of his busy day to have the interview with us. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed speaking with him. I wanted to tell you a quick story I mentioned earlier about how the universe works. So I was telling my wife about Joseph Greco, mentioning what the story is about, that the film is about. And she had a friend. As she was growing up, now we're talking about the 1970s here into the 1980s, and her friend's last name was Greco. They both danced at, here's one for you for everyone living in Hollywood, the Emerald Hill Studio for the Performing Arts, which was on Sterling Road, directly across the street from Hollywood Hills High School. Maybe you attended there. I said, "Do you think that Joseph could be related to your friend?" And she said, "I don't know." And I said, "Oh, did she ever mention that she had a cousin, perhaps, whose mother suffered from a mental illness?" And my wife's eyes lit up and she said, "Yes." So she wrote to her friend on Facebook and she confirmed that, yes, she has a cousin, Joseph, who is a filmmaker and actually shot a film called Canvas about his growing up in Hollywood. It's astounding to me that this relationship my wife had with a friend 40 years ago comes full circle to where I'm interviewing her cousin who knew sort of my wife at the studio by relationship of he would help out with their recitals at Hollywood Hills High School. He would pitch in and do like the sound and things like that, sound and lights in the booth for their recitals. And he also took classes briefly, he was telling me, at the studio. That studio, when is where I met my wife. We got married, and then in 1989, we bought the studio and we ran the business until 2014. But anyway, I mean, isn't that amazing? Think about it, my friends. This is like 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon, right? Someone my wife knew through her friend becomes someone that I interview 40 some odd years later for a podcast. And it just all came together like that. And it's just an amazing, amazing time. Anyway, I digress. I told you I'd tell you how to get tickets. So again, the tickets are free. You can visit cinemahollywood.org or just Google Cinema Paradiso in Hollywood, and it will take you to the site. You can order your tickets there. They are free. They do ask for a donation. Please give a donation if you can. This is a theater that does amazing things. It's very small. And you want to go ahead and not wait, my friends, because it is small. The tickets are going to go fast. Once again, visit cinemahollywood.org. Get your tickets for Canvas, written, directed, produced by Joseph Greco, a Hollywood resident. You're going to be supporting this podcast. You're going to be supporting Cinema Paradiso, a local business that needs your help. And you're going to be celebrating the 100th anniversary of Hollywood. And for the icing on the cake, my friends, I'll be there. So please come up and introduce yourself to me if you're a listener and you come to the showing on November 1st. I'd be thrilled to meet you. You say, Bill, we don't know what you look like. How can we come up? Believe me, you'll know. You'll see me. I'll probably be wearing my Tales from South Florida t-shirt. But go to the website, talesfromsouthflorida.com, for many reasons. Because you can hear the playlist that we have. You can catch up on episodes. You can go to our YouTube channel through there. But you can also see the picture, not a good picture, but a picture of me so that you'll be able to recognize me when you come. Please come up and say hi. I would love to meet you. Until next time, my friends, as always, I remind you to be safe and be kind. Now, hit that theme music.
Let's take a talk down memory lane, 'cause the stories around here are just insane. Pirates World, the Sporto and Wolfies too, Palm Beach to Key West, that's where we grew. These are the tales from South Florida for you, with your host Bill Monte.
Hello, friends. Bill Monte here, and I'm inviting you to join me on the podcast, Bill Monte's Guide for Getting Older. Now, this is not a podcast about being old. No, it's about understanding the world we're growing older in, how we care for each other, how we protect what we've built, and how we make sense of the systems that are supposed to look out for us, especially when we need them the most. Bill Monte's Guide for Getting Older. It is available wherever fine podcasts can be found, and I look forward to talking with you soon.